Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
Sports Radio 1043 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
It is Friday on the Schlereth and Evans show. Don't adjust your radio. That's right. Mike is out. I am Nick Ferguson sitting in with the one and only Mark Schlereth. So this is a pleasure for me to sit across from you.
It's a pleasure, dude. Let me interrupt you because, you know, you're ignoring. You're bearing the lead. This song is the lead. This is the best way to start Friday. Benny, turn that up, would you? Come and go. Good to see you, buddy.
Well, good to see you. That is, by the way, that's a great song.
Oh, yeah, the Culture Club? How can you go wrong with that? I mean, that's always the way we kick off Fridays here on the show, and it's a tradition. It's like the Masters, a tradition like none other, or no other, or whatever they say at the Masters. Who knows? I've been up too late the last couple of nights watching our hometown teams just get obliterated, so I'm drummy.
Well, you know, speaking of that, I watched the game last night, and it was very interesting because every single year it seems like hope springs eternal with the Avs, and you always think, hey, they're going to go to the playoffs, they're going to win Lord Stanley Cup, and then they just fall short. What did you see last night when you watched the game?
Well, I mean, the Vegas Knights, their fourth line scored two goals. And I'm not talking about the empty netter. I'm talking about two goals. You know, put them up 5-3. So depth, great. You know, I look at it with any team. I mean, you can look at the Nuggets. You can look at the Avs. You can look at the Broncos. I mean, you can even look at baseball. And you know, in baseball, they always say, "Hey, strength up the middle." Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to have a dude that is a receiver that they can really receive and call a game, a catcher. You got to have great shortstop, second baseman, great center fielder. That was always a baseball terminology thing, kind of strength up the middle. But when I look at teams that are quote unquote finesse teams, all right, rely on speed, rely on athleticism. You know why that's appealing to fans? Why that style? You know, hey, we won the President's Cup on a technicality. You know, woohoo, we're the best. But do you know why that stuff is appealing? In my opinion, why it's appealing to fans is because it's easy to see. Yeah, and you've seen this. Athleticism is one of the easiest things to see. On the ice, speed, alacrity. Like, it's easy to see that stuff, right? And it's exciting to see that stuff. It's exciting to see a Jerry Jeudy run, you know, routes and run fast and get by people, right? That's exciting. I'd rather see him actually execute a block when he's asked to do it, because that's football. But that's not what the fans see. That's not exciting. And so when it comes down to what I think wins in the playoffs, and I was telling Mike this the other day. It's something I picked up somewhere I read. I was consulting with a team last week, and I said this to their coach, and, you know, he writes it down. I was like, toughness is hard to find, it's hard to teach, and it's hard to beat. And when you're talking about what wins in a regular season versus what wins in the playoffs, what wins when you're making a championship run, like, it's not the, hey, look how fancy we are. You know, the last league leading, that's easy for me to say, wide receiver who won the title for yards and everything that won a Super Bowl was Jerry Rice. Athleticism is great. It's awesome to have. But when it comes to playoff football, when it comes to playoff hockey, when it comes to, you gotta, I mean, it's the toughness. It's the, you know, can you come in waves and play that way? Can you play, you know, if you're not allowed to let your speed dictate, you know, and because you don't have enough, quote unquote, weight, toughness, grit, whatever word you want to use. I always think about, show me the team that controls the line of scrimmage. Hey, in last year's NFL playoffs, show me the team that controlled the line of scrimmage on both sides. I'll show you the team that won every single playoff game.
Well, see, that's something that stood out to me, Mark. And it's funny that you bring that up, because when you look at the size of the defensemen for the Nuggets, not the Nuggets, I mean the Avs, in comparison to the Vegas Knights, the size was a tremendous difference. And the physicality, I know why you talk about it, being a former offensive line, being able to set the tone. I just felt as though the Knights were able to do that, and the Avs were just focusing on trying to be a great skating team. But for me, it was about stick play, being able to win the one-on-ones. And I just saw, you know, when a guy was against the glass, they were losing those types of battles, which allowed Vegas to control the game.
Yeah, no, I think they're five deep on the defensive side. They're you know, they're a bigger team. And here's the thing about, like, speed and athleticism. And you know, you'll occasionally see an outlier team win a championship. But it's kind of like the stars have to align. It was back in the day, like, right when I first retired from playing in the NFL. And it always seemed to be a playoff matchup against Indianapolis and New England. And Indianapolis was, you remember, Marvin Harrison, and all the speed they had with
Reggie Wayne
and, you know, and even Stoke and all the guys they had that could really run. And that's what it was Peyton Manning, and that's where they were going to spread it around. And then you had New England with, you know, with Ty Law and guys that you would look at and say, hey, man, they don't match up speed wise. They don't match up. They'd play in New England, the grass would be 14 inches deep, you know. They'd try to slow the game down. But the bottom line is Indianapolis for years couldn't get over the top, right? And it's two, you know, completely different styles of football. And you're right, that speed, I thought the Avs outplayed them in the first period. But eventually that size, that toughness, that leaning on people, eventually it takes its toll on the smaller, quicker, kind of quote-unquote finesse team. And you see the end result. Like, every time the Avs got a score, the Vegas Knights answered within a couple of minutes. You know, and it just kept – and it went back and forth when it got to 3-3. But the bottom line is the Vegas Knights had an answer. The Vegas Knights, to me, just wore them down. And you want to talk about just mentality – how about the Vegas Knights coming in here after a seven-game series in Game 1 and basically say, we're giving you Game 1. We need to get our legs back underneath us. We're going to play our backup goaltender. We're just like, hey, you can have this game. That's how confident we are in our style, which, you know, turns out to be, I think everybody thought at the time it was a huge mistake. And then you look back on it, you go, all right, touche to you. You outcoached us on that one.
Well, that's what head coach for the Golden Knights, Peter DeBoer, said, that, hey, this was an aberration game one, but now I'm seeing what the final results are. He was absolutely right. And for the loyal Avs fans, it was a great season. And now we just kind of have to go back to the drawing board and try to fix a couple of things. When we come back, we're going to talk about something that's near and dear to Mark's heart, and we're going to find out why establishing this part for the Denver Broncos would definitely set the tone and set up everything else moving forward right after this.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
It is Larry and Evans. Mike is out. I am Nick Ferguson, sitting in the chair for Mike. And Mark, I'm glad that I have this opportunity to host with you on this Friday, because there's been a pressing question that I feel as though you're the only person that can really help walk me through this.
All right.
That totally understands this. And it's about establishing somewhat of an identity.
Uh-huh.
Right? And I feel as though if the Broncos do that this year, then it's going to make things easier for whomever is the quarterback. And it starts with establishing the ground game. The Broncos went out and moved up in the draft to get Javonte Williams. They have Melvin Gordon. I have my own personal opinions on Melvin Gordon. You can tell me yours. But why is it so important to establish the ground attack?
Well, I think that's the big question. Is like if I were to ask you and you game plan, how many years did you play?
10 years.
10 years, okay. So you game planned all the time, every week, you know, and you are safety, so you were very involved in, you know, being an alley runner and in the run game, you know, you guys have a huge responsibility. You guys in a one gap defense have a gap, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's depending on the defense you're playing. If you're not playing deep middle, I mean, you're involved in that aspect of the game. So I would ask you, based on your years of playing, your years of coaching in this league, what is the identity of the Broncos running game? What do they do?
They don't really do anything well. So is no identity at all right now at this point.
It's a hodgepodge,
yes.
Right? It's so one of the things that has been impressed upon me, and it's really interesting, you know, when you sit here and this is going into my 21st year of broadcasting, my 21st year of working for a network talking about NFL football. But what I have learned in the last 4 years calling games and studying the game and trying to have a more a 10,000 foot view of the game and trying to just immerse myself in things that aren't natural to me, you know, like coverage, depth of coverage. I've been taking myself through coverage school, all the different things that you guys do to disguise, to cheat a coverage, you know, to help a particular person in a 3-by-1, you know, and you got to have a double team on the number 3 guy, like all the different things you guys do. So I say that to say that if you don't have an identity in the run game, then you don't have a run game. So if you have to game plan, scheme your run game every week based upon what the defense does, you don't have a run game. Now, here's where it hurts, because you'll have a couple of games, i.e. Miami. Beautiful schemed run game, right?
Yeah.
Miami plays so much. They play so much what we call jam front, right? So that's center, guard, center covered, right? I mean, guard, center, guard covered, right? That's the 3 inside guys completely covered. So all they did was pull whoever is uncovered, and, you know, it's a pin and pull kind of play to the outside, and they gashed him. Well, here's the point is that was a schemed game plan. You're going to have those games where the scheme just works. You outcoach the other team and you win. But on a week to week basis, if every week you're going in there scheming things, you don't have an actual identity in the run game. And here's what ends up happening to you. All those, and I classify play action in 2 categories. Play action, which is to me 7-step drops, keeping 7 guys in, you know, or 6 guys in. That's play action. Flag the ball out there, set up behind, you know, your offensive tackle or whatever. Then there's run action, play action, stuff that comes off your run game. The boot keep game, the waggle game, all that stuff to me is more run action. It's really, we're selling the run, and now we're getting our quarterback half field read outside, you know, outside contain. When you don't have an identity in the run game, you can't create explosives in the run action game, because you don't ever get anybody to really bite, because nobody knows what you run.
Right.
You know what?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I want to run. Whatever it is I major in, I want to run that so many times that you have to defend it. You've seen it defended on film. You've got to worry about it. Your backside starts to chase, constrict, to squeeze, and all of a sudden, bam, I'm a pin flat player. and now I'm in the flat, and you're not, you don't have, you don't have leverage on me. You're not deep enough. You've sucked in, you've taken an extra step, and now you're in a chase position. So if you don't take that extra step, you can play downhill on that flat. You play downhill, bam, we throw it to him, you come downhill and toward the sideline, and you tackle that for a 2 yard gain. If you've taken an extra step, now you're in trail, we dump it off to him, he turns up, and that's a 9 yard gain, and we're in second down and one. And you've been there, you've had to defend it, you've seen it happen. If you don't have an identity in your run game, if you don't have something that they have to defend every week and they know, hey, we're getting this this week, so we damn well better be good at it, then to me, you don't have a run action, play action game. And you don't take that pressure off your quarterback. And that's why it is so important to understand the running game, why it is so important to actually have an identity in what you're going to do. And when your running game is, hey, we're just going to figure out what works today and then we're going to stick with that. That's an excuse. That's a guy who doesn't want to run it. That just is, that will run it because you have to, not because you want to. And that to me is a problem.
Well, in my time being a player and coaching, it was always, let's work on the run game first.
Uh-huh.
Because if you understand the run game, the passing, I mean, that's the thing that's the easiest thing, because it's about teaching guys where to fit. It was always, spill, force, all those types of things. And for me, I loved it. Like playing here for Mike Shanahan in 907, I mean, a lot of guys didn't love 907, mm-hmm. but I loved it because it allowed us to kind of work on where we need to fit, knowing where Al Wilson was going to be, knowing where Trevor Price was going to be. But also, it allowed us, from a secondary standpoint, not to take false reads, because we don't have wide receivers out there. So right. We have to make sure our reads are clean. So if we have to make sure that tight end is actually trying to block down and knowing where we need to fit, then that helped us. So once we got in the game, we were really excelling as far as stopping the run. And you bring up the idea of the Miami Dolphins game. That was really important, because I saw something different with the Broncos run game I hadn't seen before with Pat Sherman. And I was like, yes, that's what I want. And from an offensive line standpoint, offensive linemen, from the way I look at it, Mark, is they want to establish the run first. They would rather start off the game doing that, because now you set the tone. And passing is great, but when you're able to move another grown man yeah. off his spot and then put him on his back, to me now, that's establishing some kind of physicality.
Oh, absolutely. And there's, you ask anybody who's played the game, rather run it 40 times or throw it 40 times. 100% of them say run it 40 times. So, but you have to have commitment to be able to get that done. And if you don't have commitment, you'll never get that done.
Michelob Ultra presents the Fans Match Challenge, powered by CoBank Colorado Open and benefiting the First Tee Green Valley Ranch. Thursday, June 24th, Slevin Evans versus Orlando and Sandy, and Stokely and Zach versus Tyler and D-Mac, all to raise funds for the First Tee Green Valley Ranch, helping underprivileged youth in our community learn the life skills through golf. The show that raises the most funds get two mulligans. I'm sure they're definitely going to need that, because I've heard of some bad golfing out there. Donate now at DenverFan.com/match. When we come back, we dive into the morning brew.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's time for your morning brew.
Things are gonna get weird.
You're gonna eat like me, and you're gonna crack thunder.
Okay, this guy needs coffee and cooler stuff.
You know what can really help you sort through these important issues?
What?
Orange mocha frappuccino.
Damn, Jimmy. This is some serious gourmet s***.
Let's get it on.
It was a big jump from year one to now. And, I feel more comfortable, and I feel like special team is going to be a big part of, this team's success. So that's all I've been working on.
Well, that was Deontay Spencer for the Denver Broncos, Mark. And when you think about it, how much more can he be effective in the offense, but more importantly, on the special team side of the ball?
Yeah, I think one of the things I always say about the depth of a roster, Nick, is look at the special teams. You want to know how good your team is from a depth standpoint? How good are your special teams? Because, you know, I mean, that's where many of us, me not so much withstanding because I played offensive line, but
I would have loved to see you on kickoff.
I did. I ran kickoff cover.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I could run.
Oh, we definitely have to pull up that film.
Oh, gosh, no. It was like I made one play until somebody just knocked me out, and then I'm too smart for that. I'm like, I was sneaking up on returners, right? I was a deep safety. The kicker was beating me down. I'm like, wow. I will never get hit like that again. You guys, if that's what it comes down to, I ain't making the team. It'll be interesting to see how this special teams unit progresses. So, you know, I always say, hey, listen, when you've got a player that, because your depth of roster isn't good enough and you've got a couple of players that probably should be backups, it means the backups that are playing for you probably should be looking for work. You know what I'm saying? And that's where your special teams suffer. So I'm really interested to see how much better this special teams is, how much better the depth on this roster is kind of under new management.
Next on the Morning Brew.
Oh, absolutely not. I don't think so, because for me, I think that since the start of the game, pitchers have been using substances. I mean, there's a bag of rosin behind the mound right now to help guys dry their hands and get grip. For me, I think whether they're using pine tar rosin, bullfrog, or sunscreen and rosin, or whatever they want to use to help control the ball, let them use it.
Well, that was Pete Alonso, pitcher for the Mets, claiming foul play on behalf of MLB, stating that, why are you changing the balls so they can actually fly out of the park? I kind of agree with him in a sense, as a guy that has a son that plays baseball. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, and what Pete is saying is, hey, we would rather you use, because every pitcher in the league uses pine tar. There's not a guy that doesn't use a little substance for grip. And a lot of times what you have to understand is the balls come out, they're a bit slick, and so they'll use a little pine tar. Now, there's a difference between getting a little sticky substance on your fingers, right?
Yeah.
So you have command. And then loading the ball up so that it, so
home runs.
So you're getting this ridiculous spin. Like when you watch, like when I watch Major League Baseball right now and I see a dude throwing 98 and he's getting 8 inches of run, late run on a 98 mile an hour fastball, that is just one of those things. Like, okay, like, how are you getting that much spin on a 98 mile an hour two seam or four seam? That to me is doctoring the ball versus using a little sticky stuff so I don't hit somebody going 98, right? So the hitters are like, hey, yeah, I'm all for using a little sticky stuff. Like Pete Alonso is saying, I'm all for it if it keeps me from taking 98 in the ribs or 98 in the head, right?
Yeah.
But when it's 98, you know, with 8 inches of sink and 14 inches of run, now we got a problem because now there's something on the ball that's making it do that. So that, I think that's where you're looking, what he's trying to get to.
Next on the Morning Brew.
For sure. I mean, there's always next year. It's always talk about. I feel like, I mean, I'm going to my ninth year next year and I haven't won. So I'm just definitely motivated and I'm just, yeah, it just sucks, you know, losing four in a row.
Well, the Avs dropped game six to the Knights, and I mean, where are they right now, Mark? I mean, for the season, so much expectations, but they do great in the regular season. When it comes to the postseason, not so much. So what's next for this Avs team?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of different things. I mean, I think that you look at, you know, what knocks you out every year. I think defensively, we're small. I don't think we play the physical type game that playoff hockey teams, Stanley Cup champions play. And so I think if you are Joe Sakic and you think that all of a sudden you're going to go to the Stanley Cup playoffs next year, based on speed and athleticism, you're gonna that's a regular season formula for getting a President's Cup, you know, or winning the regular season. It is not a playoff hockey formula. So if you're unwilling to adjust your roster, I go back to the 96, the 2001 team. You know, I go back to, you know, having a Rob Blake, having a Adam Foote, having a Ray Bourque. Big bodies that really understand how to play. Nasty. Like, you don't want to get in there. You don't want to come down there and mess with us. Like, if you don't have that, again, skill and athleticism, that wins. That's a regular season formula for success. And I just think if you don't adjust your roster, I'm not saying you got to wholesale changes, but if you don't adjust your roster, I just don't think you have a playoff makeup based upon, you know, my limited knowledge of playoff hockey. And I think you're hard pressed to disagree with that.
Next on the Morning Brew.
They have had their way with us on both ends of the court. I felt we quit tonight, which is something you never want to see. So I guess for game three, I'm just going to try to find guys that will at least go out there and leave it all on the line. I may have a hard time coming up with five guys that fill that, but these two games, these second halves, have really been disappointing, and that's an understatement.
So that's Coach Michael Malone talking about his team.
Yeah.
And, it's got to be tough for him, Mark, when you watch your team with so much expectations just go out and really don't perform. First he called himself and scared, and now he's looking for five guys to go out and play.
Yeah. Hey, good luck with that. I mean, you know, ultimately the Suns are just better than you, you know? And that's all right. I think we all had this feeling once Murray tore his ACL that it's going to be really hard to win a championship. And, you know, and the first two games of this series has just been, the first two games of the series have been a debacle. You know, the going in the last half of the third, the last half of the third quarter, the fourth quarter of game one, and then all four quarters of game two, been a debacle. But I think there was a certain expectation that they were only going to go so far without their second, you know, superstar. I mean, come on. The Lakers got bounced without two superstars being healthy. So they're a good basketball team. You know, Michael Malone, again, goes back to what I think wins. When you talk about toughness in the NBA, you're talking about, are you willing to defend? Are you willing to give that effort on that side of the ball? Phoenix is, and, you know, Denver doesn't look like they are really interested in that aspect of basketball. And so, you know, I mean, but ultimately, I think there was an expectation here for the Nuggets. I think the problem is the Avs, there wasn't that expectation. The Avs, you expected, hey, they won the President's Cup. Here we go. We're going to go sweeping through this. You see the 7-1 win in game one, and you think, oh, my gosh, we're going to be great. You see 2-0, and then to drop four straight, it just is like that one is disappointing because the Avs, I think you really thought had a chance to be Stanley Cup champs, and now they're doing the same thing that you and I are doing. Sitting around wondering what to do.
Yes, something that's not disappointing, that's our own Cecil Lammy joins us next. It's Claire and Evans show. I am Nick Ferguson and sitting in for Mike Evans. And there's a huge basketball game tonight at Ball Arena.
Child, please.
And the Denver Nuggets. What a story in this postseason. No Jamal Murray. P.J. Dozier's out. Will Barton just came back. And Coach Malone has gone on record publicly after the game talking about his team. And he's taken a lot of tongue lashing, you know, especially from our own James Merrillet. And, I mean, I'm a Mike Malone fan. And Mark, you have to tell me what you think about this. When a coach comes out and he calls his team soft, not once, but twice.
Mm-hmm.
I like to think that there's something there, and for him to utter the words, well, I'm going to need five guys, right?
Right.
He didn't call anyone by name, but he said five guys. So five guys, I guess that would include Nikola Jokic in there as well. And when you hear a coach say that, what's the first thing that comes to mind as a guy that played this game at a high level? And even though I know it's football, but still at the same time, your coach calling you soft and scared.
Right. I think there are times where you can do that, right?
Yep.
And I think there are times where you gotta pull back, and you gotta know, you gotta have your finger on the pulse. And I think it's always bad. It's always bad when you stand in front of the media and, you know, it's Teddy Bruschi. This is a Bruschiism from back in his New England days. Don't point the finger, pull the thumb. Right? and like, there's a lot of finger pointing going on right now. And I get it. Like, I get it that you didn't look real enthused about playing defense, right? And defense oftentimes leads to offense. It's one of those things where I always say, as an offensive player in football, when we are out of rhythm, it's hard to throw yourself back into rhythm, right? It's just hard. But if you can line up in a condensed formation with multiple tight ends and say, we're going to run ourselves into a rhythm, we're going to put our physical nature on you, then we're going to get a half field read on a boot keep game that's an easy linear throw, you know, right in front of me. And now we're going to start to have that rhythm come back to us, right? I think when you're out of rhythm on offense, and this is maybe counterintuitive, it's kind of like golf. The harder you swing, the worse the results are. Golf, you have to slow down, right? You have to have tempo. You have to have rhythm. You can't try to kill it. And all of a sudden, you start hitting it straight and hitting it well, and it actually goes further. It's completely counterintuitive. Basketball, to me, is you want to have offensive results. They start on the defensive end of the court. Play great defense, get a one-on-one, you know, and then all of a sudden you get a fast break opportunity where it's, you know, it's two-on-one, it's three-on-two, whatever. But I think that's where it starts, and I understand Michael Malone's frustration. I'm a huge Michael Malone fan. I think he's done a great job with what he's had. I just think it's like team meetings. There's only so many, you know, players-only meetings that you can go through before everybody goes, come on, dudes, we're just now we're just, this is lip service. At some point, the rubber has to meet the road, and the same thing goes for coaching. Like, how many times can you call your guys soft or whatever,
right,
before your guys are just like, hey, where are you going on vacation? Let's get these next two out so we can go, let's go down to Cancun or whatever, right? And so I just think, out of frustration from game two, I just don't know. Like, how do you think they respond tonight here at home? How do you think they respond?
Well, after losing two games and your coach talking publicly about your level of aggressiveness, I expect for the Nuggets to come out and play well. I mean, you're at home, and I think it's going to be a capacity crowd now, I guess, right, since everyone's allowed in Ball Arena. I expect for them to come out, but you play for Alex Gibbs, and I have been around Alex Gibbs, and I used to see him yell at everyone else, even if he didn't coach them, even DB.
Sure, yeah.
So
yeah.
I would have to figure that there must have been some times with Alex Gibbs where things might not have been gone that well in the game, that he kind of really ripped you guys apart. But I like to think that you responded to it, did you not?
Yeah, but Alex Gibbs didn't stand in front of, he never talked to the media, so he didn't stand in front of the media and say, hey, my guy Stink played like garbage, and now, behind closed doors? Yeah, I mean, there's, like I like to say, there's no virgin meat on my behind. It's all been chewed by Alex Gibbs. So... You know, but that was part of the expectation. You understood. You went into it that way. And if we didn't play well as a group, it hurt him, right? It like literally hurt him if we didn't play well, because it was basically you know, a scarlet letter on his coaching. Like, he didn't get us prepared. One of the things I loved about playing for Joe Gibbs is if we didn't play well as a football team, he didn't do the Michael Malone scorched earth, I'll just try to find five guys that can play out of frustration. He'd stand in front of that podium and say, 100% my fault. You want to be mad at somebody? Be mad at me, because I didn't deliver a message to my coaching staff that delivered it to the players to get my players ready. So it's on me and the coaching staff. And guess what? We will, I promise you, we'll rectify that.
But isn't that a little tough for Coach Malone? Like, right after you lose a game, like he lost in game two, you go right to the presser and they start asking you questions. You don't have a chance to actually debrief.
Because you I think you have to have a plan. Yes, you don't have a chance to debrief, and they ask you specific questions. You haven't seen the film. But I think there are times when, you know, like, I think as a player, if you're going to call us, we played soft.
Yeah.
The film tells it. We did. We played soft. We didn't play defense. Hey, we played soft. We didn't play defense. I'll rectify it because that's on me. That's on me as a coach. I didn't get that done. I didn't. Apparently, my guys didn't realize that that's what I was asking them to do. And we'll rectify that, right? But it does feel a little bit to me like I am pointing the finger. Like, it's not, hey, don't look over here. My guys just didn't show up. And I don't ever think that's the right, I don't think that's the right message either. You know what I mean? Like, and I understand in the heat of the moment and all that kind of stuff, but Nick, you had four quarters of getting your ass kicked. You knew what questions are coming and you knew you were hot, right?
Right.
I mean, it's not like it sprung on you all of a sudden. Like all of a sudden you realized you got to the press conference, you realized, hey man, we just got beat by, you know, 20 whatever. So you knew that was going to happen. So you've got to do a little bit better job as a coach of understanding the situation you find yourself in and, you know, acting accordingly, I guess. So we'll see. I'm really interested to see, you know, how they respond. And when, even if they come out and play really well, I'm really interested to see when that swing goes, when that, you know, the ebb and flow of basketball, when the Suns go on a run, how do you respond to that? Can you shut that down? Can you squelch that uprising? That's really what I want to see.
Well, you know what? There's a lot to really chew on with this. And how would the Nuggets respond, and what is it that they need to do? We tell you that right after this.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.